Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this May the 20th on the West Coast, now May the 21st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Well, it's nice to have you with us again this evening. If you've been following the news, it's pretty interesting. There's nothing on mainstream news like what you see on the internet, and I suppose we have the same attitude about them as they like to tell the public about us, but the difference is one of us is telling the truth and the other is lying. And since we're not hearing most of what we see on the internet, we can presume that either we're all delusional or they're just being corrupt and keeping people preoccupied with professional sports and song contests, dance contests, see who can lose the most fat in a 6-week period contest. Just anything you can imagine. It's utterly ridiculous what they're doing. They're promoting the breakup of all of the morals and ethics of a family. You've got one girl going after 12 guys, and she's making out with each one of these guys, and we're supposed to accept that as normal. This is what kids are being fed, and I suppose some adults as well. And it's evident when you see how families cannot function. They can't stay together. And this is done by design. I got to listen to another show earlier this evening on another network, actually. And I was listening to a gentleman who had called the host from Canada, and he was asking these questions like, he was relating a story, and I'll tell you the story quickly. What he had done was he had his two sons and a girl from their school, and this girl, he said, happened to be black. And he said, we were on a shopping trip, we were going to go to a mall on the U.S. side, and then we were going to go back. So when we got to customs, U.S. customs, they said, what's your business? And he said, well, we're on a shopping trip. We're going to the mall, and then we're just going to head right back. So they said, go ahead. On his way back, he described the Canadian border guards, and I guess you would call them customs guards. They weren't really, you know, like what we call border guards. So the customs agents gave them a hard time. And he was asking the host, what is the reason for this? And I was kind of disappointed because this particular host, who I know and who's been on this show, basically evaded answering the question. Well, we're all asking that question, he said. And it really it perturbed me, and I thought it was worth mentioning that what I discern is going on is they're trying to discourage people from leaving their towns, leaving the country, definitely, but leaving the town even, because by giving you a hard time, it becomes an unpleasant experience, and you're less likely to want to go through it again. I'm answering the question. I sincerely doubt that individual is even listening to the show right now. But by chance, if he is, or if you know who that is, you can let them know that the reason is they're trying to contain people within a an urban area or a metropolitan area. And if you think about what's happening around your country to the farmlands and the parks and the wild country, you're probably going to notice something is different there too, and that they're discouraging people or they're making it difficult for people to purchase property out in the country. Now, this is by design, and we'll stay on top of that one, because we know this is going on in the States. Actually, they're kicking people out of their homes. It's gotten worse than just being driven into a city. These people are living in tents out in the wilderness. That said, it's time for me to bring on tonight's guest. He's been on with us every week so far this month of May, and he's got a lot to share. And I think we may talk about one of the topics I brought up here before we get into what he has planned to share. He is a researcher. He's got a fantastic research website. It's a repository of just about any topic you can think of, especially the ones that are being suppressed by the mainstream and by the government. His website is called educate-yourself.org. That's an appropriate title for the character of that site. And he is also a journalist, a researcher, a metaphysician, and somewhat of an inventor. And he's my good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome back to Evident Footprints.
Thank you very much, Don. Delight to be on with you again. I enjoy these chats a great deal.
Well, you got to hear me remark about a few things, and I was wondering if anything popped into your head, knowing how much you study all these things.
Yes, exactly. I would like to embellish a little on what you had said. Your introductory remarks always do stimulate me to want to join in the conversation, because it reminds me of themes that I had at one time or another written about or remarked about, but hadn't recently. And by you mentioning about the border situation, the customs people giving this man a hard time, you're spot on.
Well, I lost Ken's audio there. There you are.
Yes,
yeah, you sort of just dropped out. Okay.
Okay.
You said I was spot on, and then you disappeared.
Okay. Yeah, I do recall that. I'm guessing at the time frame here, but I think it was probably the early 90s. It's probably Clinton's administration, I believe, is when they started this, or intensified, perhaps I should say, the idea of making national parks, et cetera, more difficult for people to easily get there and enjoy themselves and not have hassles. There were a lot of people who over the decades had either obtained property, they couldn't own it, of course, but they had houses, etc., within national parks, and in other cases their land, their property immediately bordered national parks. And these people, for the time parks were created, which seems to me was around the time of Theodore Roosevelt's administration, if people were there or had, had houses, the government wouldn't hassle them. It wouldn't try to in any way disrupt their lives or make it difficult. But they did, I recall, it probably in the early 90s. For the very reason you just stated, the idea is to herd people out of rural areas, particularly, very spread out situation, such as a national park where you might be many, many miles from another party's home, et cetera, and push them towards urban centers. Now, at the same time, if you recall, Comrade Clinton was...
Which one?
Well, the male. Bill Clinton was...
I'll ask that question again.
Very good. the one who wears the... Well, I was about to say the one who wears the suits, but that can work both ways, too. Anyway, he was turning over United States national parks to the control of the United Nations. They were calling them habitats, biosphere habitats, and so forth, and essentially turning over the control of sovereign national parks to the United Nations. That's insane, but that's exactly what he was doing. And, you know, that's, you know, I forget, Congress certainly is sitting past that. Probably executive orders was the vehicle that they did that one on. And then they started to hassle people. They wanted to push them out of areas. If you remember, Klamath Falls, I think is in the state of Washington, Oregon, Washington, I think. There was another area of contention. This was probably more like the late 90s, 96, 97, 98, probably towards the end of Clinton's second administration. There was... There was a dispute created there, again, by the government's interference. It had to do with water. Farmers in that area, and I forget the name of the river, but drew on a large river that runs through that area for water. And the government, slowed this river flow down to a trickle. And there was some relationship or with the controversy to local Indians wanting to fish this area for salmon. That somehow played in the mix. But it was, again, the government using this excuse of protecting wildlife habitat. If you recall, while Clinton was ceding these, going through this routine of pushing people out of, you know, who had homes in national parks out, they were frequently using the excuse of protecting this owl or protecting this little species of minnows in a particular river or lake or some simply obscenely, moronic reason, so that we're removing people. And, of course, the environmentalists, the main environmentalist groups have been, co-opted and controlled by the Illuminati a long time ago. John Coleman writes about this at length in his books. So they're in bed with the Clinton administration, for instance, to drum up the excuses to not allow people access to this area, that area, or to push people out because they're protecting. I mean, that was simply outrageous what went on during Clinton's administration. But it was... surely, you know, the beginning of this big push to push people out of rural areas. So where are they going to go? Naturally, they're going to go, they're being forced to more urban areas. Why? The government wants people herded into urban areas because the government, ultimately, being in the hands of fifth columnists, traitors, who are trying to destroy this country and its people, can't control you if you're growing your own food, if you're in a rural area, if you're armed, if your neighbors are armed. That's a problem for them. So they want to, we're talking about tens of thousands of people, maybe hundreds of thousands, that this is affecting. They want to get you into the city so that when they turn off the water flow, when they turn off the food, et cetera, when they ramp up their contrived crisis events, they want you to kowtow to their every dictate in order for you to get food, to get water. So you'll be forced to line up to get your, you know, your swine flu vaccination, et cetera, if you're going to expect to get basic things of survival. So in order to exert that control on you, they want to herd you into the cities. So this has been going on for a long time. You know, we're 2009 now. And I'm talking about early, you know, easily 16 years or so now they've been doing this big push to, so you're really illustrating another aspect of that game, hassling you at the border. So, you know, like, just as you said, who wants to keep on going through that? You know, you're just not going to go. So people need to be aware of that. Now, to resist it or to prevent that policy from going forward, first, the population, you know, of this North America has to wake up to the agenda, the one we're talking about, has to realize, and especially the people who are acting as minions, automatons for this agenda. And I'm talking about, you know, border agents, border crossing agents, customs people, police, Homeland Security, FEMA, you know, everyone who's involved in this game, intelligence services, military types, you've got to wake up. If you're part of, you're simply functioning as an automaton on behalf of these manipulators who are trying to destroy your country, your family, your heritage, your freedom, your, you know, constitutional sovereign republic, and you've got to stop participating in that. Now, this is happening in some quarters, thank God, but it needs to happen in a lot of other quarters. Let's say people who work for the National Park Service, for example, they armed them some time ago, completely unnecessary, but they wanted to create a more intimidating presence there because their whole game is intimidation. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on something while you're describing this. What you know, there are several, let's say, flashes of consciousness that just flowed through me, and I want to share it because it explains why this is going on. You mentioned Teddy Roosevelt, okay, and he was the president at the turn of the 20th century, and as I have shown in some of my articles, some of my research recently regarding presidential candidates or presidents themselves, I have uncovered a pattern of collusion. There's definitely something going on with the people at the INS, for example, at Ellis Island. This has been going on for over 100 years. So to see this sort of activity on a border, you know, going into another country, and, you know, it wasn't, you would almost expect that the Canadian guy would be treated like that coming here. When it was the reverse. It was going back into his own country that he had a problem, okay?
Right.
Now we've allowed so many things to happen over the past 110 years in this country, and it's really why? Because of treason being committed by presidents. You have to look back at these things in hindsight and see that doing what they did, they committed treason. Right. Bringing the Federal Reserve, a stop and think. The U.S. Treasury was quite capable of creating money. And I say creating money, in other words, you know, releasing money into the economy.
Releasing it. Right.
Okay. And in fact, constitutionally, they are the only ones to do that. Okay. And stop and think now. We had foreign bankers. Why do we need foreign bankers here? Why? We were doing fine without that. Okay, now there was some financial uncertainty, but that was created by them to give the pretext, problem, reaction, solution. But this solution was rammed down everybody's throats, and they did it in a very surreptitious way, like they do all these other bills that they're passing in the middle of the night, 4 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, before they head off to the pedophile whorehouses that they hang out in. You know, that's the character of people that we've had in our government for over 100 years. What kind of people, other than treasonous people, would do these things, knowingly do these things against their country? Either that, or they're just totally stupid. You know?
Yes.
But you see, they're devious. There's an intelligence there, but it's used for evil purposes. And they're all blackmailed, and so this goes on. Now, when you look at the parks, you mentioned the parks, and I had mentioned that somewhat. The issue about public lands is, oh, you know, we'll create this park, and then anybody can go there. This will be a special place. We'll mow the lawns. We'll dump the garbage. We'll clean the bathrooms, and we'll make sure that people can do some things there. Okay, it'll be fun. But what they've done is they've grabbed some land, you see, and they kept doing that. In fact, they gave that land a value, and then they gambled with it on the stock market. That's exactly what's going on today with all the public lands. Wow. And with everyone's private land, this is being done too.
Mm-hmm.
This is why a company like IndyMac or Countrywide can go down the tubes. Actually, it's gone down the tubes because they've stolen all the money. Even though the money was either made out of thin air or not even made at all. Just a ledger entry, you see. But they pool these assets together in the stock markets and then bounce the money around like a ping pong ball all over the globe. Reaping trillions of dollars. Trillions of dollars. It won't be long, and I've heard this as recently as yesterday, that they're actually using the term quadrillion in some of these investments.
Wow.
That's a quadrillion is 1,000 trillion. You know, and if the government spent a dollar a second, it would take 37,000, 70 years. No, 31,070 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly 31,000 years. What's a few more years? More or less, right? Okay? So I want to point that out, that this is evident in what's going on. It's not just a bare bones charge that's being made without any substance or any foundation. It's exactly what they're doing. And and what does the media do? They blame it on, well, the economy is bad. Who's controlling the economy, you idiots?
Mm.
You know, they keep making, parodying these stupid statements that yes. have no substance. Okay? And everybody sort of buys into that because, well, it must be true, you know, or they wouldn't let them broadcast it on the airwaves, not realizing that everything they're seeing is illusion or lies, you know, pure propaganda. And Ken, I just want to say, if it doesn't feel like we're living in a communist country, you tell me what it feels like.
Well, it's certainly increasingly feeling that way. We're definitely moving in this direction because
Let's not leave out fascism either. Let me interrupt and throw that in.
Well, it's two sides of the same coin. It's you know, when we went to school, we found out about fascism because the example used was World War II. The Nazis and their Italian allies were fascist. The Spanish ally was a fascist. That's how we learned those terms. And the Russians had a revolution in 1917, and there was a takeover of the communists. So Russia went communist, and following World War II, they they held on to the countries that the Russians had entered, you know, in fighting back the Germans. So the Russians took over Poland and Czechoslovakia and Hungary, etc. And we call that Eastern Europe. And for a long time, from World War II to 1989 at least, those countries were called communist countries, along with China. Mainland China was called Red China. So we learned this dichotomy in school, is that there's one level of bad guys called communism, and at the opposite end of the political spectrum, on the right side, there was fascism. But characterization of those two ideologies being polar opposite is not quite true. You wiser to think of it as a circle, and they actually meet each other in a circle. It boils down to this: it's state control over the individual. Now, that's what it boils down to. So whether it's a fascist system in which essentially a group of dictators who control, you know, one dictator at the top with a cabal of henchmen under him, controls the government, all aspects of the government, is in league with corporate interest. That's the traditional way you define a fascist state. And that's, of course, what we're moving to here. You have where's the money coming from that puts the politicians in place to install the Illuminati takeover agenda? Naturally, it's big corporate interests. And there are families who are behind these corporations, like the Rockefellers, like the DuPonts, etc. There's 13 Illuminati families listed here in America, and 13 is kind of the magic number for the Illuminati. And in Europe, you have the Rockefellers, who control the banking system, not only in Europe but the whole world, because they are, of course, at the head of the foreign banking industry that controls the Federal Reserve system here in the United States. So there are these, we call them Illuminati Illuminati families, that are behind these big corporations. But we know the names. I mean, you know, Hewlett-Packard, Raytheon, you know, the big aerospace companies, all your major Microsoft, et cetera.
McDonald's.
All your major corporations. Thank you. All your major corporations are in league with the Illuminati, following this agenda to, above all, to destroy the United States from within, and secondarily to install this one-world government in which there's going to be three planetary regions. There's going to be the European region, there's going to be the American region, there's going to be the Asian region. That's their game plan. And so we have, as you said, we have traitors and fifth columnists who control power in this country, and have been in increasingly greater infiltration in the last, you know, in the 20th century. I recall John Coleman, in his book Committee of 300, that the Illuminati is, of course, it's made up of these families, royal families, as well as wealthy corporate families, if you will, but they're not that unified. There are fractions within that that jostle for power with each other.
It's run like organized crime, which is why. You're not going to
analogy, right? It's run like the mob, right? So you have these surges in their influence in times when they have setback, largely because of their own inner dissension that it's causing a wrinkle in their projected, you know, forward advance, because if they themselves are, you know, knocking each other off in order to gain, you know, position, then that causes setbacks at times. So this is what happened following World War One. Now, young people particularly aren't being taught history the way we were in earlier decades. But World War One began in 1914. It began with an assassination in Europe of a guy named Archduke Ferdinand. And that was a contrived situation because the assassin was a mind-controlled individual, and he was assigned a job. He wasn't a lone nut shooter like they try to always sell these assassins to be, Oswald killing Kennedy. There's always these contrived presentations to the public about, a lone nut guy. In that case, it was this, quote, a Serbian national, blah, blah, blah. But he was really mind-controlled, as most...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obvious. It's not like, some guy wakes up and says, you know what, I'm going to go kill somebody.
Right.
And
right.
I'm going to start a world war.
Right.
Nobody's thinking like that.
Right.
The military industrial complex.
Of course. I mean, it's quite clear. So, okay, the point is a series of events cascaded as a result of that killing because of who that man was. He was part of what was called at the time the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And because of treaty obligations that they declared war against Serbia, okay, because of this act. So that's that, therefore, various countries in Europe had allies with other countries. So once started a war, Austro-Hungary declared war against Serbia, then the allies of Serbia, for instance, are now arrayed against the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and boom, 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 so then France is involved, England's involved, all of Europe is involved in this conflict, which escalated very, very quickly, and so that you had the Germans now, began to launch an invasion. They went into Belgium, France, et cetera, so the British, send in their troops, and before you know, we have this horrific trench warfare taking place, mostly in France, for a number of years. They're hardly moving forward. They would gain a few yards, they would lose a few yards, and tens of thousands of men are being needlessly slaughtered out there in this completely set up, contrived. In the interim, the corporate people are supplying arms and uniforms and bullets and food and trucks and horses and wagons, all the stuff you need for war for both sides. These are the guys who contrived to set World War One into motion in the first place. Why? To make a lot of money and to consolidate power for themselves in the wake of the war. Now, U.S. got into the war in 1917 thanks to a man who was chosen by the Illuminati to run for president, Woodrow Wilson. Now, he was a chump, pretty much. He was used. He realized after the fact that he was being used. There was a guy named Colonel Mandel House who essentially was assigned to him by the British Illuminati. And he essentially led him around, led Wilson around by the nose. So first he, got Wilson to go along with getting into the war, and then he had this big propaganda push, over there, to get our guys signed up. They intentionally arranged for the sinking of the Lusitania as a pretext, 9/11 type pretext, so that the American people would get riled up, which is exactly what happened as planned. So we get into the war. Okay, so we lose a lot of guys. The war ends in 1918, the armistice. Now, following that, there is this, again, setup, pretext for what was called the League of Nations. This was the first version of what today we call the United Nations, but it started with the League of Nations. And Wilson, being a front man for these people, and he doesn't know he's a front man, he's wearing these garlands around himself as the man of peace and so forth, and he's going to bring peace to the world. So he goes to Europe, and he makes all kinds of commitment on behalf of the people of the United States towards this wonderful league. But when he came back, the Congress, because there was enough informed, intelligent, and patriotic senators and House members who realized what the game was about, who knew the manipulators behind the scenes had created World War One, et cetera, and were also behind this creation, because this grew out of, there was an attempt in the, towards the end of the 19th century too, with the with a big council meeting that took place in Vienna. They tried to sort of get in a type of league at that time. It didn't work, thanks to the Tsar of Russia who sabotaged it. That's why the Illuminati set it up so that the Tsar's family would be murdered with the so-called Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, because the Tsar had sabotaged the Illuminati at the end of the 19th century, and they weren't going to let this him get away with it. So they were determined to take him out of the picture, which they did. They killed off the Romanov family. Anyway, getting back to the League of Nations, the U.S., this was by, you know, the mid-20s by this point, 22, 23, 24. They were debating this, and they ultimately did not ratify joining the League of Nations, because we had enough loyal Americans, legislators, who saw what was going on, who prevented this thing. Now, when I was in school, when we got to this lesson in the history books, the students, we were left with the impression that this was such a great pity that these unthinking rubes in the American Congress had actually impeded this wonderful effort to create this peace-loving, you know, worldwide policing organization called the League. And because of stupid self-interest and because of the, the backwardness of isolationism and that sort of stupid thinking, we missed this golden opportunity. That's the way it was presented to us in school. So naturally, that's the mindset I came away with it. Because, you know, you're a kid, you're sitting there in school, you're thinking this was a great pity. So when they present the following World War II, the United Nations complete makeup job contrivance from the Rockefeller family, bought, paid for, you know, by the Rockefellers, the UN building is on Rockefeller land, built by the Rockefellers. The UN is a Rockefeller edifice.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, so therefore, again, we're in history, now we get to the end of World War II, at last, now we didn't repeat the same mistake of World War One, and voted this, rubber stamped this United Nations right in, because now we're, So when I think even, in the decades, you know, I had gone to grammar school and high school, if I was being taught this, you know, kids today, they're not getting even a fraction of the sort of education that we got. They really don't know how we arrived at this juncture, but it was a script that the country has been following, and because we have an ever greater quantity of infiltrators who are installing the Illuminati take over America, now virtually are the majority in Congress by a very large margin. Everyone who goes to Congress, even if you're, you know, Cynthia McKinney type person, she of course is not in the loop. But once you get there, whether it's a House member or if you're got elected as a senator, you've already been compromised, co-opted, blackmailed, and controlled to the nth degree that they don't worry about you. Of course, it doesn't matter what name you use, Democrat, Republican, who cares? It's completely irrelevant. But they've got you. You're not going to upset the apple cart. Even if your name is Dennis Kucinich or Feingold, you're not going to really, or Ron Paul, you're not really going to have, they'll tolerate patriotic types up to a certain point, and that's fine. If you go beyond that point, like Wellstone, then they don't tolerate you, and they just assassinate you, and they cover it up as a accidental plane crash. And of course, they didn't want Robert, John JFK Jr., John Jr. to run for either senator or president. So they took him out too. He was going to find out who really assassinated his father. They knew it. So they just set it up that Hillary goes up there and, she becomes senator while John Jr. has this accidental plane crash. His engine blows off his tail blows off and the thing goes straight down. Of course, the plane was sabotaged. They wanted to get him out of the way. So yeah. You wanted to mention something.
Well, we had a caller, leave a message with us. And this is a quote. I don't know the caller's name, but this person said, "It's nice to hear how it all came together in World War One, but it's a lot easier to pin the tail on the various donkeys in World War Two." Well, that's true, but I think we can do that with any war. You know, while you were describing that, what came to mind was Afghanistan. You remember, and of course we've had other wars in between. You know, you had the Vietnam War, and we had the incident in the Falklands. Then you had the Russians invading Afghanistan. Prior to that, we had the Korean War too. You know, the World War II was the war to end all wars, and they followed up with that war. The Chinese invaded Tibet in 1950. We're in North Korea or South Korea, you know, this pattern of interference seems to go on and on. First, the French were in Vietnam, and then we went in there. Then the Russians were in Afghanistan, and then we went in there. Now, do you think it was by design? You remember the Afghanis that were resisting the Russians who had invaded their land were called freedom fighters.
Right.
And then when the United States moved into Afghanistan, they were called Al-Qaeda. You know,
exactly,
and it's a CIA creation. This is the whole thing that leads up to really expose the propaganda for what it is, because the media is calling it that and calling it terrorism, and it's the governments that are doing this.
Yes,
they're just using these people as scapegoats. Now you have to ask yourself, why did the Russians invade Afghanistan? Was it to stop the pipeline that was intended to go through there into Uzbekistan, or was it to take control of the drug trade, the poppy fields, or was it both? And why did they back out? Why did that country with that military might back out? Well, the Afghanis were supported covertly by our government. They were giving them weapons to resist, and they were putting some big numbers up against the Russians. They had killed a lot of their men that they sent over there.
Yep.
So when you look at how you know, we move into a territory after someone else sort of softens them up, the French in Vietnam, the Russians in Afghanistan. And they're really working together. That's the thing. All the while, we're told that, you know, these are our enemies. And I'm speaking beyond just the rhetoric of the Cold War. There were many, many incidents that go on, even recently, within the past couple of months, that, you know, Russia is sinking a Chinese cargo ship because they found out that it's bringing a nuclear weapon to the United States. Now, why would they do that? Well, they don't want to be blamed. They certainly know how these people lie about everything. So probably they don't want to be blamed for it. You know, if they were successful in sneaking it in and setting it off somewhere. So, you know, they may be our friends. However, I would certainly say that this communist model, this communist fascist model of government that we have currently is meeting some resistance in other parts of the world, especially since they're stealing from their cohorts. You know, you have these 13 Illuminati families, but these families are struggling for power. That's definitely going on. And
that's,
you know, you're
wonderful.
You're,
actually, I mean, that's the thank you for bringing this very important aspect of it up. It's true. We are facing the imminent, you know, danger of losing this country. So, however, the good news is, though, is because they're going so far. This isn't news to you, but this is just for the sake of expanding on what you just said. The good news is that more and more people now can see the advancement of fascism in this country and can see the police state coming, because the police, for starters, are acting a lot more brutal than they did, you know, three decades ago, and they're interfering in our lives a lot more than they used to. And of course, the federal government, through Homeland Security particularly, is also interfering with our life a lot more than they did three decades ago, when they didn't even exist. So people can see that now, can see that they're being forced, required to do things that they didn't have to do three decades ago. We don't have any privacy anymore, because they, by stealth and by contrived pretexts, have now given themselves, quote, the authority to eavesdrop on our phone conversations, to virtually monitor every aspect of our life. They've just given themselves, of course, this is against the Constitution. The Constitution specifically says that you have a right to, privacy in your own domicile, but they've usurped our constitutional rights. So a lot of people, however, can see it now, and they could see that, thankfully, a lot of people have finally come to realize that 9/11 was an inside job. Except one guy I heard on my favorite far-left disinformation program on KPFK, Sonali Kolhatkar, had a guest on this morning who infuriated me. I really have to take the time to expose Sonali Kolhatkar. His name was, I think, Joshua Taylor. He was a chief editor of a blog. I think it's called AltNet or something close to that. I didn't memorize the name. I did record her show, though, with my tape recorder. I was just outraged. Here's another guy who's using, I don't know, I suppose the left perspective is identifying us conspiracy, you know, wing nuts who say 9/11 is an inside job. He's totally pouring water on that. It was just outrageous. I recall a few years ago, it might have been 3 or 4 years ago, on Art Bell show, he had this young editor who was a cousin of Michael Chertoff come on the show. He was a 25-year-old editor for Popular Mechanics, which is,
Was he related to Dick Cheney, too, or...?
I don't remember that, but I remember he was the cousin of Michael Chertoff, and he tried to play it down like, oh, he didn't even know what he said. Okay, long story short, this was a famous show that a lot of people criticized Art Bell about, because this guy from Popular Mechanics essentially would use the whole show, two-hour, three-hour show, to dump on the whole notion of 9/11 being an inside job. And this guy, they had done a big, splashy disinfo debunking story, I should say, in Popular Mechanics about it. So he was there to, push that propaganda onto Art Bell listeners. Well, this guy this morning, Joshua Taylor, was doing essentially the same thing, but very slick individual, very, and this is another aspect of counterintelligence that the public has to be aware of. The military for many decades had created units. Well, actually, it was since World War II, actually, the creation with the OSS. But they had created these special units in which are engaged in what they call a psychological warfare. They want to convince the bulk of the public to believe the propaganda. So they they have many outlets for that, and they plot strategy, and above all, they study human psychology. They see what can persuade people to go this way or that way over an issue, and of course, you know, the Tavistock Institute are in the city of London is the premier propaganda outlet, dissemination outlet for the world, and there's a guy named Rees. John Rawlings Rees, who was into this. He had Freud, among other people, had psychiatrists, psychologists studying how to manipulate people's belief systems, emotions, etc., to get them to believe whatever you want them to believe. Okay, so you got this guy Joshua Taylor, very slick individuals. He needs to be rebutted because he, compared to the popular mechanics clown, this guy was much more slick, and people, young people particularly, who aren't aware of the use of neurolinguistic programming, the use of psychological devices, so that, you know, this guy kind of sounds like a liberal, and Sonali Kohatkar kind of sounds like a liberal, and, you know, they love people, and they don't want war, and, you know, they sell you the feel-good package from the left. But he's inserting this Illuminati propaganda throughout this whole interview with her, is that 9/11 was not an inside job. That's what the conclusion he wants you to come to. It's ridiculous. He's a conspiracy theorist. He must have used that word 15 or 20 times in the conversation. I mean, that's straight out of the, you know, the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld book of debunking, you know, conspiracy theorist. The public has to be aware of these individuals who are inserted in the internet world. They're certainly inserted in radio and television. There's all stratas of them. Some are, you know, kind of brutish type. This is what you hear on AM talk radio. You still hear them to this day. Every AM talk radio host, now they've all jumped onto the anti-Obama bandwagon simply because Obama's a Democrat and most of these guys affiliate with the right. So Rush Limbaugh and Roger Hedgecock, these are the people that I'm hearing here in Southern California.
Well, they're totally controlling the media. I mean, whatever happened to Susie Cream Cheese? Instead, we have Sonali Kohatkar.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Right.
Why do we have to have these exotic names like that?
Right. Well, she's not born in the United States. She doesn't make it quite clear where she's born.
Yeah.
One is not sure whether it's India or Pakistan or the Middle East. She kind of, when you try to read about her on the internet, it's rather nebulous. But she's coming from somewhere over there.
Yeah, we did learn a few things about her.
Yeah, we did learn a few things. So maybe we need to pick that thread up and continuing to look at Sonali's background and et cetera, because she's definitely aiding. Now, knowingly or unknowingly, I don't know. I mean, she certainly sounds sincere when you listen to her, but it's very aggravating to hear her doing the Illuminati's propaganda work for them.
And stop and think. How does someone who graduates from a school, from a college, majoring in software, computer software, I don't know, design, probably. How does a person, a foreigner, become a host, a talk show host on National Public Radio?
Yes, right.
How does that occur?
Yeah, exactly. Well, very similar. How is it Arnold, an Austrian national, whose father was a member of the Nazi Party, a policeman, become the governor of California?
He always said, "I'll be back." And they like the way he says California.
Yeah, California. And he just lost his shorts yesterday because he lost his propositions. He was expecting to get all of his tax propositions passed. They spent $31 million against to promote that thing, and the opposition spent $4 million. They lost their shots yesterday. So that was kind of nice to hear.
Well, you know, there's plenty of talk out there that Maria Shriver is Arnold's handler. So,
yes. Which I'm fairly certain she is.
Yeah. So you have the, again, the influence of the Kennedy clan, you know, but it's not the, it's not John or Bobby Kennedy. It's difficult to identify because Maria Shriver's part of the mainstream media too. You know,
Right. She was, you know, inserted into that position when she was young. Of course, the path is smooth for all of them. I found that information from a very highly connected person who knows the Illuminati family very well. In conversations with this party, it was made known to me how they smoothed the way for them. Bill Gates didn't rise to the position that he's in now just because he was this, you know, brainy, nerdy guy in college who developed, you know, no. I mean, that's a nice cover story, but he was set up to, and it was decided Tony Blair was going to be the prime minister of Britain in the early 70s or so, because this party was at a function where he was told, well, you're going to do this and you're going to do that later on. So all these individuals who we see in national news as politicians, as entertainers, as business moguls, etc., these positions were greased for them, and they came from, born to a certain family and put into the glide path is made for them. So nothing is by chance. It's all prearranged and planned, and pretty much everyone who, you know, is in Congress, not all of course, but a large percentage of them, they've been groomed for the job. I mean, Al Gore is a perfect example. You know, his father was a team player for the Illuminati. He, of course, is a team player all his life. Edwards, all of them who have these, you know, these career politicians, you know, they're forever in office, you know, the Kennedy, et cetera. It's all smooth for them. If possible, Don, I'd like to do, in the last 15 minutes or whatever time is remaining.
Actually, we don't have that much time. We've just got a couple of minutes here.
Okay, well, in that case, then I'll have to save it for next week. But I just want to, as much fun as I have talking the political side of it, I would like to just branch into information about taking care of yourself health-wise. It's something that I talk about on my website, but we haven't gotten into it much on these talks. And it'd be very useful and a good idea for people to prepare themselves now to be able to take care of their health completely on their own and not depend on having insurance, because, you know, as people lose jobs, they lose insurance coverage. But except in the case you're in a, you know, bloody car wreck and you need emergency surgery, for instance, to save your life, or, you know, you have a stroke or you have a heart attack, in which those situations in which you must be in an emergency room in order to save your life. Barring that, we can learn how to save and take care of our health. So all degenerative diseases are first preventable, but secondarily, even if you have these diseases, we can learn to take care of them ourselves. And people need to do this because it's so, first, you don't need any money. If you have knowledge, even if you're broke, if you don't have a job, if you know what to do, if you know what techniques to employ, if you know what herbs to use, if you know what methodologies are used in the natural medicine world, then you don't need to pay for pharmaceuticals. You don't need to go to an allopathic physician to get a diagnosis. You can learn how to treat yourself. And I'd like to spend some time on the basics of that area, because I talk about on my website the fabulous books of Dr. Hulda Clark, and her books are so valuable because she has discovered many huge and important secrets of diagnosing what causes all of our major diseases, starting with cancer, for instance, because four of her books are devoted to the treatment and cure of cancer. But she actually has addressed all diseases that afflict, you know, the majority of us. So whether it's, you know, nerve disease or degenerative disease or diabetes or glaucoma, blah, 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 she talks about it in her books. And she holds nothing back. She has made fabulous and immense discoveries, because some time ago, it's probably in the early 90s, somewhere around 91, 92, somewhere around there, working with her son, Jeff, she put together a fabulous little simple device that she tells you how to make. She has it in all her books.
Oh, Ken, I hate to cut you off, but we're out of time. We're going to have to entertain that on the next show.
All right, we'll pick it up on the next show. We'll devote the show to talking about these fabulous discoveries of Hulda Clark and how anybody can access this information from her books. And it's a wonderful feeling of empowerment to be able to not need the system to take care of yourself and your family's health.
Well, I would suggest to the listening audience in the week until Ken comes back to pick up this conversation, be careful about what you put in your mind, and then you'll be more careful about what you put in your body. Those are the first steps that you can take, and it doesn't cost you a penny to do that. In fact, you'll probably save money once you start paying attention. And you'll be thinking clearer, and many, many things will fix themselves, because we've got the power within us to heal ourselves. But we'll have to talk about that next week. Ken, I want to thank you for being on the show, and it was interesting. I could go another 3-4 hours
on
these topics.
Of course, but we don't want to exhaust the staff there.
Yeah. So thanks for being on the show, and I'm going to say good night to the listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, Ken Adachi. You can visit his website at educate-yourself.org. And special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.